Hello, everybody. I'm going to talk a little bit today about head injuries and helmet use among severely injured motorcyclists, and primarily looking at the impact of Michigan's partial repeal of the universal motorcycle helmet law. So we have a rather large research team with researchers both from the U of M Injury Center as well as from the U of M Transportation Research Institute, the Department of Surgery, and the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, who funded this research. There are no financial disclosures or conflict of interest. I did want to also acknowledge the Michigan Trauma Quality Improvement Program, which provided some of the data for the study, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So motorcyclists account for about 14% of all traffic fatalities, while accounting for only 3% of all registered vehicles. And in 2012, this accounted for almost 5,000 fatalities and almost 93,000 non-fatal injuries. Head injury remains the leading cause of fatal injury among crash-involved motorcyclists and is also a leading cause of their presentation to emergency departments for injury following crashes. We know that helmets are effective prevention devices. Multiple prior studies and meta-analyses have shown that helmets reduce the risk of fatality after a motorcycle crash by about 42% and reduce the risk of a head injury by about 70%. And contrary to some of the reports in the media, helmets do not confer any increased risk of other injuries. So in an effort to increase helmet use, states initially passed universal helmet laws that mandated that riders had to wear a helmet if they were out riding on roads to increase both rider protection and to promote higher usage among riders, and then ultimately from a societal benefit, decreasing the cost that resulted due to crashes. There was a 2005 study that showed there were 110,000 motorcycle crashes across the United States, accounting for about a little over $17 billion in injury-related costs. 36% of those involved unhelmeted motorcyclists, who accounted for 70% of the total costs associated with that. However, in 1975, Congress stopped requiring states to have universal helmet laws as a condition for receiving federal funding for highway construction. And as a result of that, 31 states have repealed or partially repealed their universal helmet laws. And subsequent evaluations have shown that repealing these universal helmet laws has decreased both helmet use and increased rates of head injury and fatality. So Michigan is the first state since 2003 to repeal its helmet law, which it did on April 13, 2012. And it went from a universal helmet law to a partial helmet law, which means that to legally not wear a helmet, a rider had to be over the age of 21, had to carry an extra insurance rider of $20,000, and have had either a motorcycle endorsement as part of their licensing or to have passed an approved motorcycle safety course. So last year I presented sort of our initial look at what the effects of the motorcycle helmet repeal were, looking at police-reported crash data. And we saw with that evaluation that helmet use among crash-involved riders dropped from about 97% prior to the repeal to 74%. And that disproportionately affected certain populations, including male riders, out-of-state riders, and those who were intoxicated at the time of their crash. However, we did not find a change, an overall change, that was significant in fatality rates. We did note that fatality rates were about 2.7 times higher among those who were unhelmeted as opposed to helmeted after the repeal. This evaluation has several limits, the limitations. So the analysis used the CABCO scale for injury and didn't have access to trauma or hospital data and was not able to incorporate both hospital-related outcomes and crash-related factors as part of the evaluation. So with the current analysis that I'm presenting today, we wanted to look at the impact of the helmet law repeal using a linked data set of all police-reported motorcycle crashes that ended up receiving medical care in a Level 1 or Level 2 Michigan Trauma Center. So this was a retrospective cohort study examining data from 12 months before and 12 months after the repeal. We received exemption from the University of Michigan IRB. The study population, which is limited by the available data in the trauma registry, included all patients age 16 or older who were evaluated at one of the 23 Level 1 or Level 2 trauma centers in Michigan for the 12 months before and after the repeal with a blunt or penetrating traumatic injury. So this is patients who came in and received care from the trauma service, not just from the emergency department. So those who were excluded from this included anybody who died on scene and was not transported to the hospital, a rider who was under the age of 16, and again, injured riders who didn't end up getting trauma care. So we had two sources of data that we linked to create a comprehensive data set. One is the trauma registry data, which is from the Michigan Trauma Quality Improvement Program. So this is an initiative that's sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield to aggregate de-identified trauma data from all Michigan trauma centers, and they provide feedback to the trauma centers on their patient outcomes and a series of quality of care indicators. So we have access to that data, and then we also have the police reported crash data, which is the data I presented last year, which is a census of all motor vehicle and motorcycle crashes that occur on public roadways, including those that result in either fatal or non-fatal injury, as well as those that result only in property damage. So we did probabilistic linkage to link the two data sets. So we used four common linking variables: age, sex, date and time of the crash, and date and time of their arrival in the emergency department. Injury date plus or minus 24 hours was used as a blocking variable to constrain the linkages. And we kept high probability matches within the data set, and any trauma registry case that linked to multiple crash data sets was reviewed manually to resolve the discrepancy. The main outcome variable that we used for this analysis was head injury. We used the CDC case definition for traumatic brain injury, which includes ICD-9 diagnoses of either fracture, multiple skull fractures, intracranial injury, including concussion, cerebral contusion, laceration, or any variety of intracranial hemorrhage, an open external head wound in a patient who subsequently died, or a diagnosis of unspecified head injury. In addition, we looked at injury severity score and in-hospital mortality. There's a variety of variables available to us from both data sets, including sociodemographics, their ultimate disposition. In the trauma registry, we had safety device use, and we also had helmet use from the police crash record. Our general rule for this was we used the police crash record record of helmet use, unless it was unavailable or missing, and then we substituted the trauma registry variable for those that were available. The primary reason for doing that is that the initial safety device use in the trauma registry, they record seatbelt use very well, but they don't tend to record helmet use very well. So they had gone back and tried to abstract that data from the medical charts. So we thought that would be somewhat less reliable. We also have blood alcohol content. As many of you know, almost every trauma patient who comes in gets a blood alcohol level on arrival. And then we tried to do some measure of hospital service utilization since cost data was unavailable to us, and that included ICU length of stay, ventilator status, whether they got intubated or not, and then neurosurgical intervention, which was a composite measure of several neurosurgical procedures, including craniotomy, placement of cerebral pressure monitor or cerebral oxygen monitor. From the crash record data set, again, we had helmet use, we had posted speed limit, which is a proxy for the speed at the time of the crash, and DMV state registration. So we analyzed the period before and after the modification of the helmet law, and as I said, we looked at helmet use as well as several outcome variables, and then we also did several bivariate comparisons looking at those with and without head injuries and those with and without a helmet. And we constructed two multivariate models to look at predictors for head injury and non-helmeted rider status. So to start to look at the results, so there were a little over, just under 1,700 trauma registry records that we attempted to link to the over 8,000 police crash records. We had a 70% linkage rate, and the linked data set was a little over 1,100 cases. 6% of those had missing data that for the variables that were included in the final regression. So we did case deletion on those after we noted there was no evidence of missing data bias. And the final linked data set contained 1,094 cases, a little over 500 in each before and after the repeal of cohort. So the populations before and after were relatively similar. So from an age standpoint, the mean age was 44. About 88% were Caucasian, and about 90% were male. The majority had either private commercial insurance or no-fault all-road insurance, and about 20% were intoxicated at the time of the crash. both in the before and after cohorts. The big changes that we did see was looking at helmet use and head injury. So helmet use declined from about 91% to 66% after the repeal, the partial repeal. And head injury went up from about 43% to 49%, almost 50% of the cohort. Looking at measures of hospital service utilization, while admission and need for ventilator or ICU admission didn't change, we did see an increase in the percentage of patients requiring neurosurgical intervention after the repeal. When you break down the types of head injury, what we see is concussion rates actually declined post-repeal, but we did see a significant increase in the number of patients presenting with skull fractures or base of the skull fractures. This is a bivariate comparison of those wearing a helmet in the cohort to those not wearing a helmet. And what we see is that among the cohort that was not wearing a helmet, there was a higher percentage of those that were either on Medicaid or self-pay for their insurance. There was a higher rate of alcohol intoxication, lower speed limits, and in terms of health-related outcomes, we see higher injury severity scores and much higher rates of head injury, up to about 64% among those not wearing a helmet. Also, among those not wearing a helmet, there was significantly higher hospital service utilization, so higher need for intubation and ventilator, higher rates of ICU admission, higher rates of neurosurgical intervention. In the multivariate model, looking at predictors of those who were not wearing a helmet use, we see Medicaid and self-pay, which is a proxy for lower socioeconomic status, lower speed limit rates, and alcohol intoxication were significant factors. And then we also constructed a multivariate model to look at predictors of head injury, and we see that intoxication at the time of crash triples your odds for a head injury, as well as helmet use increases your odds by over twice for a head injury. So our analysis has some limitations. So as I said, we're not able to include pre-hospital fatalities, and lower-level injuries that didn't require trauma service activation were not captured or analyzed in the data set. We used ICD-9 coding of head injury for our diagnosis, and coding practices may vary across different hospitals, and we did not have access to hospital cost data, long-term rehabilitation cost data, or long-term functional outcomes, especially among head injury patients, which would be an important consideration. So in conclusion, we saw helmet use rates decreased 27%. We saw an increase in head injury rates of 14% following the repeal. There was a smaller proportion of head injuries attributed to concussions and a larger proportion due to skull fractures, higher rates of neurosurgical intervention post-repeal, and we, as I mentioned previously, helmet non-use and alcohol intoxication significantly increased the odds of a head injury, and overall unhelmeted riders have much worse outcomes as well as much higher utilization of hospital-based services. And that's it. I'll take questions. So I don't know any that specifically look at the question of the helmet repeal, but we actually did an observation analysis looking at different types of helmet use. And Dr. Buckley, I think, is presenting or did present that data yesterday, so might be able to talk a little bit more about that. But yes, you're right. There's a lot of issues with non-DOT approved helmets that are a part of the problem. Yeah.
One of your early slides demonstrated that one of the things that was not associated with helmet use was an increase in other kinds of injuries. Mm-hmm. You indicated that there had been some mythology out there that helmet use actually contributes to other kinds of injuries. Can you talk about that mythology and whether there are other myths out there that we might be hearing about that we would need to dispel?
So the big myth was that helmet use increased C-spine injuries. But as I said, the literature doesn't bear that out in terms of the prior evaluations that have been done. in terms of other myths out there, just the helmet repeal advocates like to state that, you know, there's been no decrease or there's been no change in fatality rates post-repeal. I think looking at Michigan as a state in comparison to other states where there's been repeals, what we've seen is in other states, helmet use rates dropped from being in the 90s to being in the 50% range. Michigan didn't drop that low, but when you start to examine the seasonal effect of the data, what you see is that it does drop that low in the summer months, but in the spring and fall months, the rates actually go up. So the reason I think we're not seeing the same fatality effect that we're seeing in other states is because people are wearing their helmets at the beginning of the summer and at the end of the summer. They're just not wearing them in the middle of the summer. And so I think it's just going to take us a little bit longer to see that same fatality change because the numbers aren't huge overall. Larry.
Bradford will tell you that all this restrictive vision and restrictive hearing makes it less safe. So we're able to look at the rate of crashes to see if or any kind of exposure information to see if crashes both nationally and at the state level and general.
So not as part of this analysis. I'd have to look back and see exactly what the numbers were. I don't remember there being a huge uptick in crashes overall among the prior analysis, but I could go back and look.
And this is really cool. You know, we had the chance to analyze this from several states. We just want to look at the effect of this in public use. Because if it's a universal law state, we can't kind of affect that in public use. But if it's a partial law or a null law state, then we get the double the risk of it.
Going on, yeah. Other questions?